right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about The Empty Man, which is not exactly a new movie. Normally, I don't do this. Normally, if a movie is already a couple months old or whatever, I kind of just let it slide and just move forward because there's so many new movies to cover. But this is a movie that has started to pick up such a strange cult following. It got dumped, and we'll get into this more during the conversation. Joining me for this one is Daryl Armstrong from Rise Up Daily and the Cyber Shorts VR Film Festival. But yeah, we'll get into it more in the conversation. But this is a movie that was dumped, which is such a weird thing to say, but dumped in theaters during the time when no one could go to the theaters back in October of 2020. Just left to die, basically, when no one was going to be able to see it. Got pretty bad reviews at the time, and then all of a sudden people picked up on how interesting and unique and different it is, and the story has kind of just grown from there, and people just keep talking about this movie, and it's pretty clear that this is a future cult film that people are going to be talking about for a long time, so I didn't want to let it slide. So we are talking about The Empty Man, and before we get to that conversation, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about our Patreon, where we post advanced episodes of Piecing It Together, bonus content from both Piecing It Together and Awesome Movie Year, bonus content for my music career. I also do these monthly updates just talking about everything going on in the world of me and everything I'm involved in. So lots of great content over on the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/bydavidrosen. And that is what I've got going on. There are a lot of Piecing It Together episodes coming your way, so make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. And let's get into this conversation about The Empty Man. All right, so this should be a fun one. This is a very weird movie that a lot of people have been talking about, and I, even though it's a few weeks old as far as the VOD release is concerned, a few months old as far as the theatrical release is concerned, I couldn't let it slide by. We had to talk about it here on the show. It's The Empty Man, and here to talk about it with me is Daryl Armstrong from Cyber Shorts and Rise Up Daily. Daryl, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here, man. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this, and you know, before we get into it, it is your first time on the show, so why don't you tell people a little bit about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so I write film reviews, criticism, mostly right now on Film Inquiry and Rise Up Daily, which I also edit. I've also been working on the 88 Names podcast, producing that. Mm-hmm. We started that last year as a book launch campaign for Matt Ruff for his latest novel, 88 Names. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of become its own beast, going into a second season. A lot of fun. We've gotten to talk to an Oscar-winning short film director, NASA employees, and game designers.
That's cool.
Yeah. Mike Pondsmith, who was the creator of Cyberpunk, which was a lot of fun. So I am also the co-founder and co-director of Cyber Shorts Film Festival, which we started last year. This is going to be our second year. An online short film festival based in VR, which is a lot of fun. We started it last year when the lockdown hit from COVID as a way to be able to keep showcasing some short films in a theater-like setting.
Yeah, no, it was fun last year. You know, obviously with my music videos, like going out to film festivals was always a major way for getting my stuff out there. And that was kind of cut off for me. And it's, you know, it's cool. A lot of film festivals going online, you know, they got to do what they got to do. But doing the whole virtual reality aspect definitely was a unique method for doing it. And yeah, it was fun checking that out last year and being a part of that. So I'm glad you came up with an interesting new way to do film festivals.
Yeah, you know, it was just, it kind of hit at the right time. And yeah, it's been fun. We're looking to grow it. May 1st is going to be the date of our festival for this year.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody can check that out. Go to the website, cybershorts.online.
Perfect. Well, right on. Let's talk about The Empty Man. We're going to, of course, get into puzzle pieces and all that in a minute. But this is one you had messaged me and said, hey, are you planning on doing an episode on this movie? And at the time, I still was interested in the movie. I just hadn't gotten around to it yet. And I knew that it was starting to kind of grow in its reputation. But was this something that you had been kind of following along with, or did you just kind of discover it out of nowhere?
I discovered it, I guess it, the theatrical release was in October.
Yeah.
Of last
year. Which is this weird backwards thing of dumping it to theaters, which in the past, dumping means streaming or VOD or whatever.
Right.
But because of COVID, turning everything upside down, the theaters was the dumping ground.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't aware of it at all until maybe a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had seen people mentioning it, discussing it, you know, a few people that I follow who have tastes similar to mine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I got to check this out. I watched it and I was like, wow, this did not deserve to be done.
Yeah. And that seems to be the story around this movie. You know, spoiler alert for where I'm going to go with the conversation. I think the movie is a bit of a mixed bag. I definitely enjoyed parts of it, but regardless of how successful it is as a movie, it did not deserve to be just dumped. And I just clear that the studio had no idea what to do with it. And there is like a whole story out there. There's a great interview with the director. And I mean, this is a movie that the studio put a lot of money into, which these kinds of movies usually don't get that kind of money. And then they took a look at it and said, wow, okay, we don't know what to do with this. And
yeah
it's there's a grand tradition of these kinds of movies. And I don't know if maybe some of them will show up in our puzzle pieces, but, you know, the weird studio horror that they didn't quite know what they were getting themselves into as they were putting them together.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure I've got a few puzzle pieces that'll fit in there.
Yeah.
it's this kind of film that's a mashup between genres, I think.
Sure.
And when we see that with film studios, they usually don't seem to know what to do with these type of films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get that, but I think they do find an audience, and often they kind of push creativity for viewers and even, you know, other filmmakers.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one other thing I want to mention before we start jumping into pieces, this was, of course, based on a graphic novel, The Empty Man. And back when I first started on my podcasting journey, when I was first starting piecing it together, you know, obviously as a podcaster, I guessed on a lot of other podcasters to get my name out there. And the first one I guessed it on was called The Comic Concierge, where I was asked to read a comic, and that comic was The Empty Man. And I had no idea what it was. It was my first comic I'd read since I was like probably 12 years old or something.
Because wow.
I'm just not really a comic guy. And yeah, and it was weird that was, you know, eventually turned into a movie. I mean, at the time there were rumors it was going to get turned into a movie, But that, you know, that was like 4 years ago or something. So yeah, it's really interesting to finally come full circle and the movie ends up happening. And I will say, obviously, I was just starting piecing it together out there. You know, there weren't really many listeners at the time, but the host of that podcast, you know, he checked out what I was doing with my first couple episodes and he asked me, if this was a movie, what kind of puzzle pieces would I bring up? And even though the movie ended up quite different from the original comic, I think some of those pieces still stand. So they're going to end up on my list. Maybe some of them will be on your list. But, with that said, why don't we start getting into some of those puzzle pieces? What do you got for your first one?
Sure. The first puzzle piece I have, Alien.
Okay.
The director, David Pryor, actually started his career working on the isolated score track for the Alien DVD release.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it fits there. But the main part is the giant kind of skeletal figure that
sure.
you see at the opening of this film. And it's interesting, the opening of this film, it's basically like a 22 minute, I think it's 22 or 23 minute short film before we even get to the credits. And there's this group of travelers who run across this giant kind of skeletal creature. And it plays out in this opening sequence that is pretty standard, I think, kind of fantastical horror. But that skeleton figure, it kind of touches on that uncanny valley, right? Where you've got a human-like skeleton, but it's off. It's too big. It has this weird kind of rib cage that it's almost holding out in front of itself. You know, it's reminiscent of very much, I think, of the space jockey from Alien.
Right.
And that kind of sets the mood or the tone for the film. There's this very weird, odd discovery that these people have made.
Yeah, I think that skeleton creature definitely in that kind of H.R. Giger kind of realm of mm-hmm. creature design. And then also, yeah, speaking of the space jockey, I think bringing up Alien is a great puzzle piece to kick this off with, because, you know, one of the things that people either like or don't like about this movie, The Empty Man, is it is not very interested in giving away all the intricacies of how any of this crap works. There's a lot of secrets to be, you know, to kind of pawn over for who knows how long, because we'll probably never get a sequel. We're not going to get six more movies like Ridley Scott and his Alien universe. So I don't think we'll ever figure it out.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I think some movies are better not being fleshed out in, you know, half a dozen sequels.
Yeah, probably not. And I don't think that there's necessarily room for it. But at the same time, there are so many questions left open. I would assume maybe the comic book series, if you read the whole thing, I read like the first four issues or something like that. Maybe it gets into more of that stuff, although I think it's fairly different, though, like where the actual story goes. So I kind of doubt it. But yeah, leaving so much open-ended, I think, is definitely a hallmark of those first couple of Alien movies, for sure, before Ridley Scott decided to go back in and explain every last
thing in a little detail.
So I'll go with my first puzzle piece, which, going right along with, you know, that whole backstory of this director, this, of course, being his first feature, but having gotten his start in those kind of DVD commentary special editions and all that stuff, the other big one that is well known is David Fincher. And so immediately I thought of Seven, because, you know, dealing with a cop thriller that may or may not have some kind of religious or supernatural angle to it. And just that real dark, kind of noir tinged, thriller. and a real big focus on the detective work here, which, you know, of course, you think of Seven, you think of all of the kind of horror aspects. But when it comes down to it, it is a cop mystery, basically. It just happens to have a lot of those aspects to it. And, you know, both have a lot of horrific imagery, you know, mixed in. You're not just getting a standard cop, you know, movie, but they both come from that same kind of a place. And I kind of think like Seven is kind of the gold standard for that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It certainly in modern film, that this neo-noir aspect, which is a big part of this film, and specifically, you know, you mentioned, you know, Seven being centered around a almost cop kind of procedural type of film. But this, I think, surprised people going into it, and probably why the studio didn't really know what to do, is because it has so much of this neo-noir framework that it's built around. It has the horror elements. It's a mishmash.
Yeah, it very much is. And it was advertised, I feel like a teen slasher or something.
Totally.
Like that. You know, the Empty Man was like a slasher character or something like that. And yeah, and then just to kind of jump back to what you were saying about that 23-minute intro, which is like its own other thing. That's not this you know, cop procedural thing. So it's like there's a lot going on here, a lot at play. And I think that makes for a really rich movie experience. And I think that's why people are kind of connecting with it, because people kind of tend to like when you get this kind of mixture of tones.
Yeah, the director, David Pryor, you know, I think he was swinging for the fences here.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has said, you were talking about the comic that it was based off of. And, you know, he has said it is not, you know, flat out, it's not a direct adaptation of the comic. Mm-hmm. It's its own thing. It's more like a story based on the original material.
Right. Absolutely. So let's move on to another piece. What do you got next?
So next, going back to Pryor's previous work, he actually worked on the special edition release of a film called Ravenous.
Okay.
Which, when I saw that originally, gosh, I mean, it was probably 15 years ago, it kind of blew my mind. Again, it's one of these films that starts in one direction and you think you're watching a certain type of story and then just throws a curveball and you go down this you know, left turn. Ravenous starts as a military Western set during the Mexican-American War.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you think you have this kind of Western kind of movie going on, and then it turns into this cannibal horror film.
Right.
And you're like, what is going on? So, yeah, Pryor, the director, Pryor had worked on the special edition release of this. So I definitely think this type of filmmaking is, you know, something that probably has worked his way into, you know, his own work and views as a director.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he, by looking at these kinds of masters of mixing genres, he was able to kind of, you know, say like, you know what, I know this is my first film, but screw it, I could do that too. Like,
yeah,
I trust my audience to join me for this ride, no matter how crazy it gets.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, he, like I said, you know, I think he was swinging for the fences here.
Definitely.
And, you know, sometimes people don't know how to interpret that. Critics, mm-hmm. Film viewers, the studios. But, you know, I think it's a very solid outing. And I think this definitely has the potential to become a kind of cult film.
Definitely.
Like Ravenous was.
No, definitely. And great piece there. I'm going to go to another puzzle piece, and this one is not actually a movie, although there are movie versions of this, but I'm going to go with, and this is going to open up a lot of spoilers into where this movie goes, but I'm going to talk for a second about The Secret. And the law of attraction that is a part of that whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah, this movie is great.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, The Empty Man, is essentially the dark, dark, dark end of what could happen for someone who is very deep into The Secret and the law of attraction. If you take the idea of manifesting things into being, which is, you know, a very positive idea and, you know, has led to a lot of, you know, self-help that helps a lot of people along the way. But if you take that and transcribe it onto cults and people trying to communicate through demons and whatever the hell else is happening in this movie. And by the way, I should say, I never do this, but after I watched this movie, I watched one of those explainer YouTube videos because I was like, I need a little more. I am not going into this conversation without getting this a little bit spoon fed to me because I definitely need something. And I gotta say, it didn't give me shit watching that explainer. Yeah. I was in the exact same spot where I was when I started. I think I picked up on everything this movie is willing to give us, and it's just, you know, you kind of gotta go from there and just figure it out for yourself. But yeah, there appears to be a major, major twist. And of course, spoiler alert, we always talk spoilers here on the podcast, but the protagonist of this movie has essentially been conjured into being by the bad guys of the movie, by this cult that he is investigating. They basically conjured him into being with a completely imagined past, like created past, just so he can investigate them and then get tricked kind of into being the conduit for this demonic evil man force thing. I think I'm basically getting it. Right, but yeah, it's so hard, but yeah, all this is possible thanks to the power of positive thinking and manifesting what you want to see happen in the world.
Yeah, totally. That's such a great. I wasn't even thinking about, like, I have a few puzzle pieces coming up that kind of address this, but mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about that. And I think that's a great kind of left field thing to pull in here.
yeah, because sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, it's totally that kind of philosophy kind of spun to the worst possible end.
Exactly. Which is a pretty funny path for a movie to take. And I mean, it's definitely, you said earlier, swinging for the fences. This guy is swinging for the fences with some of the ideas in this movie for sure. But yeah, what do you got for your next piece?
So next piece, and I think this kind of leads into it, Under the Silver Lake.
Sure.
Which is, again, another film that just is a mishmash kind of genres. Mm-hmm. But it's very much rooted in the neo-noir kind of mystery set in a, you know, 21st century setting. There's the, and this is a spoiler for Under the Silver Lake as well, but there's this mysterious, sinister cult that's mm-hmm. working, you know, in the background of both films. There's the search for a missing girl mm-hmm. That kind of drives the narrative of both stories. And it's kind of, I think it's of a, I think it would make a very interesting double feature.
Yeah.
You know, one is kind of leans into the horror aspect with The Empty Man. Under the Silver Lake is a bit more traditionally noirish.
Sure.
But yeah, I think this is a type of film that would benefit from that. You were saying you looked up an explainer. Mm-hmm. I did that for Under the Silver Lake.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of that almost a mood more than necessarily a narrative that has perfect explanation. It's creating that that mood.
No, yeah, absolutely. They're both movies that would benefit from multiple viewings. They're movies that I'm sorry, but no matter who you are, you're not going to get every last little detail off that first viewing. There's just too much that is, not explained or just not explained in a way that kind of reveals itself at first. Like it requires that extra thought and extra going back in. And is it all even there in the first place? Who knows? But certainly with a lot of thought and a lot of pondering on what exactly is going on, you can get to it. But definitely they're made in very cumbersome, strange ways to kind of get you just as stuck in the narrative as the main characters of these movies, which is an interesting thing as well. But Under the Silver Lake is a great piece to bring up.
The other thing, similarity that I was thinking about was they both at maybe about 2/3 of the way through the movie, the protagonist has a conversation with an older, in the Empty Man's case, cult leader played by Stephen Root, who is just always amazing.
Oh, he's great.
Whenever I see a movie and know that he's going to be in it, I'm gonna like, well, there's at least a few scenes I'm gonna like, because he's just so much fun to watch. And in Under the Silver Lake, we had Garfield's character met the songwriter. And again, it was both of them had these conversations with these people who have more information, but leave you guessing as an audience member. It gives you just a little bit of a tease to what's to come.
Yeah, I like how both of those examples could have just been big exposition dumps with just spelling out every last thing, but they go the opposite direction and just keep you just as confused, but give you a lot more clues along the way. So.
Totally. Yep. Yep.
Right on. Well, I'll go on to another puzzle piece. And this is one that fits squarely into what I was talking about earlier with the big budget film that, the studio puts a lot of money into, and then they see the final cut and they're like, what the hell did we just bankroll? That's the film A Cure for Wellness. From a few years ago.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, this is an interesting movie, and I think this movie, The Empty Man, is going to carve out a similar path as far as, cult big budget horror films are concerned. This is a movie with a lot of, fairly big, not huge stars, but like known stars and a known director and good effects and some really interesting ideas. But for better or worse, it absolutely has zero intention of holding your hands, zero intention of explaining itself along the way. And I think most people left the theater just scratching their head, like, what the hell is that? And, these are movies that really have to trust their audience, that the audience is going to care enough to follow along, be confused, be confounded, but still be willing to ask questions after the fact and try to figure it out. And I think horror in general is the place to do that kind of thing. I don't think you're going to see many dramas or comedies that are like straightforward and try to, try to confuse you in that kind of way. Try to make you ask more questions in that kind of way. I think weird culty horror movies is where it's at for that to happen.
Yeah, it's almost like they're the type of movie that expects you to want to watch it again. It has that built-in rewatchability factor, right?
And it's a gamble, but it's when it's done right, though, that's where cult films are born, I think.
Totally. Yeah. 100% agree. Yeah, that's a great one. It didn't occur to me, but as soon as you said it, yeah.
Well, what do you got for your next one?
So next one is another cult film. I'm not sure really how many people are familiar with it. Kill List. This was a 2011 film by British director Ben Wheatley, who's gotten a lot more work recently. He actually has a new film out right now, In the Earth.
It comes out in April. Yeah, I actually just got to watch it the other day. It's really good, really weird.
Yeah. So have you seen Kill List?
I actually haven't. No, it's like kind of at the top of my watch list after having watched In the Earth. I'm like, I need to finally catch up with this because I know a lot of people have talked about this movie.
Okay, yeah. So again, it's another example of a film that you start watching it and you think this is a film about basically two hitmen. And, you know, the kill list is the job that they have. They have three people to kill. And then it throws the curveball. And there's this scene in The Empty Man where James Badge Dale's character finds the cabin that this cult has in the woods and goes to investigate it, trying to find this girl that he's searching for.
Yeah.
And he winds up observing this cultish ritual. And there's just this kind of amazing moment in the film that probably my favorite moment in the film, where he's watching them from like across a little stream or whatever in this woods. And they begin to react to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, you as an audience member, and you assume it's the character, he's thinking, you know, they haven't seen me. And then they start moving toward him.
Yeah.
And he just goes, oh, hell no, and books it.
Yeah.
Which was just such a fun moment that kind of made him human as a character, right? Because...
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine yourself in that situation. You'd be like, nope, I'm out, right?
Yeah.
So toward the end of Kill List, there is a very similar scene. When I watched The Empty Man, I was like, oh, this reminds me of this scene from Kill List. And I actually went back and watched it last night. And yeah, it's just this great moment where, you know, you think the story is going one direction and it just goes somewhere you don't expect. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And you know, there's other similar films like this, The Wicker Man, you know, who have this similar type of setup and payoff. But Kill List, I think, was the one that really stood out to me. In comparing those scenes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. And yeah, that scene is that's pretty great. That is how any of us, I think, would react in that situation. And I feel like that is the kind of moment that only a first time filmmaker who is just like a lover of these kinds of movies would put in their own movie. You know, it's like,
yeah,
they're just like kind of like an outsider looking in at filmmaking, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and just being able to do it.
Yeah, yeah, you absolutely.
Know. Totally.
I love it.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to go on to another piece here, and I mentioned that parts of this movie are kind of like your traditional kind of horror slasher movie, but then, of course, all these other parts are totally different. The trailer sold it on kind of being that kind of movie, even though it definitely isn't, aside from little aspects here and there. But those aspects, I wanted to include one kind of traditional slasher movie in my puzzle piece list, and I almost didn't include this because I haven't seen it since high school. It's actually on my rewatch list because of the reboot that's coming out later this year. That is Candyman.
Candyman.
Yep, absolutely. And the Empty Man has this strange little ritual that will make him come kill you, even though he's not a him and it's not a thing. And it's like, it's really just a total misdirect. But
yeah,
it's still the way it's presented in the film, though. It's like you blow in a bottle, you think really hard about the Empty Man, and then it comes and kills you. And the teens all know about this and they pass it off as urban legend. And of course they do it anyway, because, you know, that's what teenagers in these kinds of movies do. And that whole sequence really doesn't have much to do with where the plot goes and what the story is trying to tell. It's just there to kind of build up this, I guess world building, like to build up this whole thing of the Empty Man being a thing people know about along, you know, with throughout this world. And so it's, like I said, very different from a movie like Candyman, but just having those rules and that whole urban legend that, that people kind of test themselves with because they love to be scared. I thought that he's a good example.
Totally. Well, you know, and the trailer leans heavily into the,
yeah,
which, you know, and I get, you know, when you watch a trailer, you think, okay, you know, this looks like a type of movie I want to see, but this has that element, but it is part of, as you said, world building.
Mm-hmm.
And as we learned throughout the film, this cult has actually built this script for the main character.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like, you know, meta,
yeah,
where it is world building both for viewers, but it is also world building for our main character, our protagonist,
right,
within the film itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, and it makes sense. Like, you know, if I'm part of a cult that is, you know, manifesting this person that I need to give a backstory to, this is perfect, right? It's something we were familiar with through Candyman, through, you know, that idea, you know, you say a creature's name or a demon's name, you know, three times and they appear. So it definitely is, I think, a very smart way of world building that you only understand is designed specifically for the character at the end of the film.
Yeah, you might not even understand that until 37 minutes into your podcast recording on the
yeah,
film, and that's when this guy gets
right. Yeah,
I'm appreciating this movie more as we talk about it.
It definitely, it pulls from that slasher monster demon tradition.
Yeah,
that we all know, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, and since we all know it, we can all kind of put those pieces together and kind of connect the dots between, you know, who this character is without actually seeing every last bit of the scene. He doesn't have to solve the crimes. He just needs to be a crime solver. And it's like, oh, we've seen this kind,
yeah,
of movie. We know what kind of guy this is.
And then it smartly, you know, pulls the rug out from under that.
Yes.
You know, just the structure of the film, you know, it's this mishmash. It goes in, you know, takes, you know, left turns somewhat out of nowhere, but I think it was actually really smartly constructed, and I think more viewings will play that out. I don't know. We'll see. I've only watched it twice, but
yeah, twice is more than most movies. So,
you know, oh, sure.
There's not many movies I watch more than once. So that,
yep,
you know, definitely.
Yeah.
But right on. What do you got for your next piece?
So my next piece is, again, not, it's not going to be a film. It's actually a book.
Okay.
Occult's Pendulum by Umberto Eco. Eco is, was a novelist, Italian novelist, and semiotician. And Occult's Pendulum, I like to describe as a thinking man's Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
From Dan Brown. It's basically a story, and it's been a long time since I've read it, but these three guys who think they have uncovered, you know, a vast conspiracy that reaches across, you know, politics and religion throughout the world. You know, Illuminati kind of stuff, basically. Again, I'm going to spoil the book, but at the end, you read through the book and it's like, it goes out of its way almost to say conspiracy theories need a lot more work in you know, real life than actually is going to happen in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's hard to pull off an Illuminati type thing without somebody talking about it, or
right,
you know, we're all human, we all have you know, conversations with family and friends, and, you know, drink too much at a bar one night and you tell the whole story.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do it. But then at the very end of the book, it just, it pulls it all out, the rug out from under you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a conspiracy, and it almost shatters the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
As a reader, or in the case of the film, as a viewer, not in the way like something like Deadpool does, where, you know, he talks to the audience, but right, it's almost right. like a showing, not telling. You know, you have to then go back and think: is it a plot hole? You know, in a few cases, or is that the point? Is it this right. unreality of what we're actually seeing?
Yeah, and that's another thing within the movie. There's moments where it seems like reality is kind of tearing. Like, you get those like digital effects of like the screen just chopping up for no particular reason. But it seems like, yeah, like reality is kind of falling apart because of the events of the film.
Yeah. 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 And there are a few like kind of, and right toward the end, kind of flashback moments.
Mm-hmm.
That don't necessarily, I think, make sense in a narrative structure.
Mm-hmm.
But again, create this mood, this feeling, and this shattering of what you think the story is.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, you know, this actually, I haven't heard of this novel, but it sounds like it would have went really well with Under the Silver Lake as well. Which,
oh yeah, totally.
That's why I love that movie so much. I mean, it's like, it's this movie kind of making fun of conspiracy theories while at the same time just being filled with conspiracy theories for you to wrap your own head around,
yes.
you know? And that's why I find that movie to be so much fun. So yeah, that's great. And then I was actually considering including Da Vinci Code on my puzzle pieces list. This sounds okay. like it's a better version. So yeah,
you know, it's not like a casual read. Like it gets pretty. It goes into a deep dive,
mm-hmm.
on a lot of history of a cult that both pulls from real sources and stuff that Echo just made up.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a fun read if you're in the mood for it.
Right on. Well, I will go to another piece here. And there's a thing with, you know, a lot of people die in this movie, and most of them are made to look like suicides. Whether or not they are or aren't, you know, that's kind of some of the secrets that are at play here. But I thought of M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening because of the way this idea is kind of spreading from person to person. And along the way in that movie, everybody ends up killing themselves. Like, each person who gets that seed from The Happening, of whatever the hell the big twist in that movie
yeah.
was, but everyone kills themselves once it gets to them, you know, it's something in the air or whatever. But yeah, in this, it's kind of like that too. It's this idea is kind of creeping from person to person, and once they get it, they end up killing themselves, or maybe it's the cult killing them, you know. It's hard to really say for sure, but that's certainly what we're led to believe as things are unfolding.
Yeah, yeah, I think that totally ties into the secret that you brought up yeah. earlier as well. That
sure
that kind of manifesting reality through an idea,
mm-hmm.
and you know, in this case, it spread. And you just talking about that reminded me of another film, Pontypool. If you're familiar with that,
I've never seen it. No.
It's basically a zombie story where zombies get infected by spoken words and understanding of meaning.
Oh.
And it's set in, this guy is a talk radio host, and it's pretty much completely set in their radio studio. And what you were saying, I think, totally ties into both that and Pontypool, and totally would make sense here, that the whole idea of this manifesting reality through conversation or ideas, you know, shown in a creative way. I think that's kind of a concept that that we can talk about, but it's hard to visualize.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds like a really unique concept for a horror film. So I'm going to have to check that one out. I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephen McHattie plays the lead there.
Right on. Well, I'll go on to another piece, and this goes along with some of the other religious iconography and all of that that we've been talking about throughout this conversation. You know, obviously, Da Vinci Code is a great example of that, but I thought of Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, because this cult is definitely, I think, drawing some inspiration from the world of Scientology and the idea of this modern new religious kind of thing that is spreading from person to person. And, you know, it's getting these just devoutly, like rapturously devout followers, despite it seeming from the outside looking in like a very, very strange setup. And it's kind of hard to imagine why these people all are, you know, quick to jump into this thing where the idea is to manifest this demon creature and everybody just is super on board with it. But in the same way, you know, a lot of us look at Scientology and are just like, wow, so people are like into this, huh? That's surprising, you know?
Yeah, you know, in this case, it's almost like a cosmic horror type of thing. Like, you know, you read H.P. Lovecraft or see some of the films that have been inspired by his work. It is hard to wrap your head around, yeah, being in a cult that wants to literally bring about destruction.
Yeah.
And the Master is... I'll admit, the only P.T. Anderson film I have not yet seen. So
okay,
I'm gonna have to go back, and it's been on my list for a while. I just haven't seen it.
It's a weird one, and some fantastic performances in there. Definitely, definitely check that out. But I only have one more piece after this. So what do you have next?
I have one more piece as well.
Perfect.
That's Angel Heart. That's Mickey Rourke and Robert De Niro. Mickey Rourke plays this private investigator, basically, who gets hired by Robert De Niro's character in the film to track down this missing person. And by the end, he finds out that the missing person is actually him. And it's this flipping from the protagonist that, you know, you're watching the movie kind of rooting for, to at the end, it's that whole meme, are we the baddies, you know?
Right.
and this realization that, oh, I am the bad guy here. That kind of ends with James Badge Dale's character in The Empty Man here, realizing that he is just a construction for the bad guy.
Yeah, no, classic twist in the kind of detective kind of role.
And Angel Heart as well is this very neo-noir influenced horror film from, you know, mid-80s that I think a lot of people don't know how to classify well.
Right.
You know, because it has these horror film elements and it has these neo-noir elements. And I think it's a fascinating, you know, mashup between these two genres.
Yeah, absolutely. Great piece. Great final piece there. I will go with my last piece. I started it out with Fincher. I'm going to close it out with Fincher. And that is Fight Club. Usually when I bring up Fight Club on this podcast, it's because of the whole split personality thing. But here it's more about the cult aspect of Fight Club, of these young people who are just like absolutely ready and willing to cause havoc and die for this greater cause.
Yeah.
And you know, that these people, they it's again, it, this goes right along with what we were just talking about with the master, but it's like, it's kind of hard to put yourself in those shoes of what exactly they think they're getting out of joining something this crazy.
Right.
But they are in, they are 100% in, and they are creepy as hell. That is for sure, especially in this movie. Not so much Fight Club. Fight Club's more weird and fun almost in a dark way. This is just straight creepy.
Yeah. 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 I think that has to do somewhat of, you know, the aesthetic and the mood that the director is trying to make. And I think here it very obviously goes to that super dark place. Whereas Fight Club and you know, the group that was there is more disaffected, modern people, you know, living in the world and feeling frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, at the society around them.
Yeah.
You know, people want to find community. And even if that's in a weird ass cult.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's where people go.
At least you get to hang out with Steven Root. So
yeah, right.
That's always a positive. Well, I will close this thing out with the finished puzzle, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here. But for the finished puzzle, we talked about Alien, Seven, Ravenous, The Secret, and The Law of Attraction, Under the Silver Lake, A Cure for Wellness, Kill List, Candyman, Foucault's Pendulum, The Happening, Pontypool, The Master, Angel Heart, and Fight Club. And just to kick off some closing thoughts, I will mention that when I did that Comic Concierge podcast I mentioned for the original comic book series, a couple of other things I didn't bring up during this, but I think could potentially still fit. True Detective, the series, which I think goes kind of right along with Seven, for that kind of a thing. Also, John Carpenter films, because of the, the creatures and, you know, that skeleton thing we talked about earlier. And then also Event Horizon is something that from the original comic I kind of connected it with. And then The Shining, there's a lot more of the main character like kind of losing his mind in the comic. And so there was a little bit of that there. I guess you could still see some of that in the film, although as we've talked about, the film does split paths from the original comic. But I just wanted to kind of throw those out there as other things we could have potentially talked about along the way. But do you have any closing thoughts, any main points we didn't get to along the way of talking about puzzle pieces?
The only thing, and I actually looked this up because quite a few reviews have specifically called out this very long, you know, introduction, pre-credit sequence, and the length of the film. So I wanted to look up, and I did, the longest pre-credit sequence in a film is from the last movie, which was directed by Dennis Hopper and featured Kris Kristofferson's film debut. That was from 1971.
I was going to say Gaspar Noé's climax. That comes in at least, I want to say, 15, 20 minutes in.
Okay. I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah. His films, I kind of don't jump at.
they're an acquired
anymore.
Taste for sure.
Sometimes they're hard, but yeah, okay, that's a good one.
That is pretty damn interesting, and I would say like to critics who are like kind of critiquing the idea of it taking that long with the intro, I actually would say that opening sequence is my favorite part of the movie. I like a lot of what follows, and I love a movie that really swings for the fences with its ideas and just really going for it. But that first 20 minutes, just as it stands, is such a tense and well done introduction to this movie. And I kind of wish maybe if we were going to shorten this thing, maybe some of it would come off of the setting up of the Empty Man as this urban legend amongst those teenagers. I think that is some of the stuff that to me doesn't quite work as well. So, you know, I don't know. I guess it's hard to say, you know, who knows what would work best. But as it stands, though, I I wish more major studios would give these filmmakers with a vision more money like this to really just go for broke and try things like this.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, that opening sequence almost stands by itself as its own self-contained, you know, short story.
Definitely.
So you almost get two stories for the price of one.
Absolutely. Well, I think that does it for The Empty Man. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Sure. I just literally this week saw Life Force for the first time.
Oh, I don't think I've ever actually seen Life Force. I always recall the box art. But...
Yeah, Toby Hooper.
Yeah.
Who did, you know, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist. It was another film I watched somewhat specifically for prepping for this as a film that starts one way and, you know, 20 minutes into it, you're like, I'm watching a completely different film than when it started. But, you know, it takes you for a ride and it's a lot of fun. It has, you know, some dated special effects, but John Dykstra worked on it. Yeah, just a lot of fun as kind of a throwback movie, yeah. but new for me.
Right on. Yeah, maybe I will get to that one of these days. I've always been interested in it. I was always intrigued by the box art for sure. But right on. Cool. Daryl, this was great. Why don't you tell people again where they can find you and everything that you're up to?
Yeah. So you can find my writing on film usually. When I do is at Film Inquiry or Rise Up Daily. Check out the 88 Names podcast. That's 88 Names on Twitter. That has all the links. And cybershorts.online for our upcoming Cyber Shorts Film Festival going into our second year.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm hoping to submit something again for next year. So we will
That'd be awesome.
We'll see. Awesome. Very cool. Well, thanks so much for joining me, and maybe we'll get you back again sometime soon.
Thanks, David.
You got 5 seconds to tell me where you buried the loot.
Oh, man, it's great. They got film reviews, recommendations, special guest games. Hey, calm down. It's there on Spotify and Google Podcasts. I mean, it's easy. Thieves Monthly Movie Loot. Check it out.
That was a great ad. I really like that one. I got to redo my ad that I send to other podcasters to promote Piecing It Together. I like our ad, but that's a really good one. I got to do one with a little thought thrown into it like that. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Empty Man. Thanks to Daryl Armstrong for joining me for that one. Definitely check out everything he's got going on. That Cyber Shorts VR Film Festival is a really fun fest. My music video Multiply was in it last year, which was a great way to get my music out there during a crazy pandemic where I can't actually travel to regular film festivals. So it was a very interesting and cool experience. So yeah, check that out. And as always, I want to remind you to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you're listening to podcasts. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Aside from that, I already told you about the Patreon, but you can, of course, check that out too, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. And don't forget to share Piecing It Together with whoever you like sharing podcasts with. You know, the Patreon is cool. You know, supporting that is wonderful if you want to do that, but the greatest way you can support this podcast is just by simply sharing it, because that gets us out in front of all new people, and that is what we are trying to do. So, before we get to closing this thing out with a piece of music, I do want to mention that Last week, I put out a new single. It's called Destined for Greatness. I played it at the end of the April Trailers episode, so I'll play it again at some point, but I'm not going to end another episode with it. But Destined for Greatness is a brand new single I just released, something to kind of hold everybody over until my next album is ready. But check that out on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you get your music. It's called Destined for Greatness, and I think it's a pretty cool track, so enjoy that. But right now I'm going to play you out, you know, I could have went with a creepy dark song, you know, to go with a movie like The Empty Man, but I was thinking more specifically about that bottle blowing that goes on in the movie. Part of the lore of The Empty Man is you blow into a bottle, make that bottle blow sound, and then think about The Empty Man, and then he comes and kills you. So I was thinking, where do I have a song with that kind of bottle blow sound in it? To maybe creep you out after you just watch The Empty Man. And this song isn't super creepy, but it's got that sound in it, so I figured I'd play it. It's from my latest album, David Rosen. It's called Like Never Before. I really like this track, so hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming out real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.